Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. It's October 21, 2013, and this is episode 392. Following on from our episode on why we should expose to the right a few months ago, I received a question from listener Christopher Pearson asking how I meter in manual mode. So today I'm going to explain my techniques for metering in manual mode. Thanks very much for the question, Christopher. First of all, I want to explain that I leave my camera in evaluative metering mode now. For long-time listeners, you may remember that long ago I used to use center-weighted average metering, but I stopped that years ago because I now just like to see what the camera thinks about a scene. And evaluative metering allows the camera to do just that, think for itself a little bit more. I know people that use spot metering as well, which works well, but I haven't used spot metering in years either, as I just don't feel that there's a need for it. I should also explain that just because the camera is set to manual mode, that doesn't mean that the camera stops metering. As you look through the viewfinder in manual mode, the little carrot, and that's C-A-R-E-T, that indicates where the camera thinks the exposure is, still works. So, for example, if I have my camera set for too short an exposure compared to how the camera sees the scene, the carrot will be below zero on the exposure level indicator scale. And if I have my exposure set too high, the carrot will be above zero. This means that when shooting in manual mode, we aren't flying blind. We still have the benefit of seeing where the camera thinks we should be. And that allows us to quickly make adjustments based on what we see in the scene. I've spoken about this before, but just to recap with an example, but the most common manual mode compensation that I do is when photographing in the snow. The first thing I do when I'm shooting a snow scene is point the camera down slightly and fill the frame with snow, as you can see in this example image that I've got in the Enhanced podcast and also on the blog at mbp.ac/392. I usually start at ISO 100 and then I set my aperture for the depth of field that I want to shoot at, and then I start to adjust my shutter speed until the meter in the view through the viewfinder indicates how high I am above zero. And for snow, for a white scene, I want that to be exactly two stops over. I aim for plus two stops because I know that is how I need to expose for whites to be white and not grey. Remember that cameras want to make everything 18% grey, so without this manual compensation, the photo would look like this next example image, and we don't want that. Once I have my exposure locked down like this in manual mode, I know that my snow is going to be a beautiful white, and the red crown cranes that I shoot are also going to be perfectly exposed. Even the texture in their black feathers is going to be visible. If I left this up to the camera, the white of the cranes would be grey, not white, and their black feathers would be so dark there'd be no texture at all in those areas. Also, in case you're wondering why I wouldn't just use plus two stops of exposure compensation in aperture priority mode, that's because the birds can move from their white snowy background to a very dark background in an instant, as we can see in this next photo. And when that happens, instead of the camera underexposing the whites trying to make them grey, it sees all that dark and increases the exposure trying to make the black grey, and the white bird just goes supernova. So remember, for snow scenes, if you fill the frame with snow and adjust your exposure so that the camera thinks you're two stops overexposed, you'll be in good shape. For very dark scenes, you would usually do the opposite, but as I explained in the Why We Expose to the Right episode, you may not always want to do that. But if you missed that episode, I suggest you go back and check that out instead of me covering that again today. I'll put a link into the show notes as well. With other scenes, I really don't meter the subject as such. I literally look through the viewfinder and estimate how much of the frame is bright and how much is dark, and adjust the exposure to what I think will be close, and then take a test shot and check the histogram. The estimation process takes a little bit of getting used to, but the more you do it, the easier it gets. I'm usually either spot on or just a third or maybe two-thirds of a stop over or under at tops. I leave my metering mode in evaluative, as I said. I don't use spot metering because even with spot metering, the camera still wants to make everything 18% grey. So I find that it actually takes me longer to find my ideal exposure than adjusting based on a guesstimate and then shooting the test shot. I would still want to shoot that test shot even if I was shooting with spot metering, and I still may have to fine tune it. So I just leave my camera in evaluative metering mode and, you know, just go through the process that I've mentioned here. To arrive at my ideal exposure with the data almost or just touching the right side of the histogram, I might change any of the three parameters in the exposure triangle. I generally start with aperture because I usually want to control the depth of field first. Then I set a low ISO of say 100 if there's plenty of light, and then I adjust my exposure with the shutter speed. If it turns out that my initial ISO setting was too slow or too low, then I might revisit that and increase it to, you know, say ISO 400, even 800 or higher if I need to, so that I can get the shutter speed that suits my subject matter. In the earlier example, I used a shutter speed of a 640th of a second, but for flying birds, I actually like to go a little faster, so I might go to ISO 200, for example, and 1,250th of a second for the shutter speed. Also, if there's a bit of patchy cloud around, I might find that I have to adjust the exposure every so often. And I usually do this with the ISO as well. So I might increase from ISO 200 to 400 while the cloud's there, and then go back to 200 when the sun comes out again. How you handle this will depend on your camera. Canon cameras are generally easier in this respect. They have an ISO button to, you know, you just select the ISO that you're going to change, and then you adjust it by turning a dial. Some Nikon cameras bury the ISO settings a little further into the menus, which can make this a bit of a pain. So you'd need to figure out the best way to make these changes for your own equipment. I also want to note that I've become so used to shooting in manual that I have a hard time going back to aperture priority mode, because it takes me more time to adjust my exposure with exposure compensation than it does to adjust my manual settings. I do wish, however, that I was better with aperture priority, as this makes more sense in some situations. When I'm doing street photography, for example, I'm now using aperture priority with auto ISO, and I'm getting used to it, but it's still hard for me. I forced myself to use aperture priority, for example, in Namibia earlier this year when we visited the Himba people. We were shooting in a variety of lighting conditions and it just made more sense. For this photo of a young Himba man sitting in the doorway of his hut, my ISO was set to 400 for a 60th of a second exposure with an aperture of 3.5. The camera would have chosen the shutter speed of 1/60th of a second because I was shooting at 64mm with my 24 to 70mm lens. So the camera's trying to use my focal length as the shutter speed, to avoid camera shake. I'd of course set the aperture myself because I was in aperture priority, and the camera selected ISO 400 because that's what I needed to maintain the minimum shutter speed of a 60th of a second. I also see from the EXIF data for this shot that I dialed in minus 2/3 of a stop of exposure compensation because the subject is predominantly dark. Had I not dialed in that compensation, the young man would have been too bright, probably overexposing the highlights in his forehead, and his two sticks there would have also been overexposed. One last tip that I wanted to relay, because I found it very useful, is that if you have or can borrow one, a light meter can really help you to understand exposure. Mine is a quite old Minolta light meter that is now discontinued. I think if I was to go out and buy one now, I'd go for the Seikonic L478DR light meter because that's the one that Zach Arias swears by. Of course, you don't really need a light meter now that the histogram on the camera is there. But I do still use mine in the studio, especially when I'm setting lights up in a customer's home or office. But that's really the only time I use them. And, you know, it's great because I can just plug in my Profoto Air remote right into the meter and then use that to trigger the lights while I'm walking around just taking the meter readings. But that's going off topic. The point I wanted to make here is that when I first got a meter, I was already shooting digital, but just spent a lot of time taking incident light readings, which is where you use the little white dome to read the level of light falling on your scene. And just seeing what the meter reading said, seeing if it was close to my estimates. Even without a camera, I would just carry the meter around with me and just meter stuff. I also use the spot meter, which is where you look through the little viewfinder in the meter itself and take a reflective reading of the light bouncing off of your subject. It can really help you to hone your exposure estimates just doing this. And also when you're out shooting, compare how your camera sees the scene with its limited artificial intelligence based on stored scenes, and compare that to the raw readings from your handheld light meter. I don't suggest that you run out and buy a meter for this, as you'll probably never use it. But if you know someone that has one, ask if you can borrow it for a month or so and just meter the hell out of your world for a while. It's a lot of fun and it really helps. Anyway, that's about it. I wish I could talk more about metering, but really, the histogram is king to me. So I generally start with my guesstimate, adjust while viewing the carrot moving up and down the scale in the camera, and then take a test shot and check the histogram to ensure that the lightest part of my scene is just up to the right shoulder of the histogram. And that's pretty much it in a nutshell. Before we finish, I did just want to let you know that we have filmed the second of the two Snow Monkeys and Hokkaido tour and workshop for 2014, but we do have some spaces left on tour one. So that's from January 27th to February 7th, and it really is an amazing tour. So if you are thinking of joining us, then, you know, check your schedule, make sure that you're okay to go, and go over to the website at mbp.ac/ww2014. And the WW stands for Winter Wonderland. I'm still calling it that. It never gets old for me. I've been there to these places so many times now, but it just really is the best Winter Wonderland tour. And we shoot the Red Crown Cranes, the Stellar Sea Eagles, White-tailed eagles, the adorable snow monkeys, of course, hooper swans, and just so much beautiful winter landscape that it's I shouldn't say this myself, but it's an amazing trip. So if you're interested in joining us, do come over to the website. It's linked from the top page at martinbaileyphotography.com as well. So while you're over looking at the images from the this week's episode, I do urge you to take a look at the details of the Winter Wonderland tour. So thanks very much for listening today. Remember that you can find me on Google+, Twitter, Facebook, etc. And links to everything that I'm up to are at martinbaileyphotography.com. So do drop by and take a look. I'll be back next week with another episode. But in the meantime, you take care and have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.